Donalena Kitchen talks about food. Donalena Kitchen talks recipes. Donalena Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio.
The Donalena Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food farming advice, recipes, and opinions. We've been doing this, for quite a few years here, and we never run out of things to talk about.
Amazing.
Amazing. And this is brought to you by Community Radio. Community Radio is really a gem, and Central Iowa is very fortunate to have KHOI bringing you these tales by us and everybody else that helps make this radio station.
It showcases the diversity of our little country town in the middle.
We are here. Well, hey, Donna, happy Groundhog's Day.
Yes. And there is no sun today, so...
What does that mean?
Right, let's see. It goes like this. If the groundhog comes out and he sees his shadow, then we're going to have, what, 6 more weeks of winter?
Right.
Something more long winter. But today there will be no shadows because it is very overcast. So, in the long run, that is a good idea because, of course, we will be happy to be rid of this winter.
Yes, we will. So, sleep tight, little groundhog. Very good. And I wish to mention here, we have a tie-in here. There is a Donalena Kitchen show that was posted January 5th, 2021, a couple shows ago. And if you are really interested, there is a how to cook a groundhog recipe on that.
It is in our archives.
It is. So you can go to www.khoifm.org and find the Donalena Kitchen. It is not on our recipe page because I don't think either of us have tried that recipe, but it is in case you would like to cook a groundhog. Okay, very good. they're probably pretty tasty. A little heavy, vegetarian.
I suppose they taste like coon or squirrel or something.
Yeah, yeah. You think of them as being kind of rotund and lots of fat.
They could be a little greasy.
That's true. And they've beaten everything in my garden. They must taste good.
Yeah, they deserve to be cooked, right?
Yeah, very good. Well, happy Groundhog's Day to us all. Today on the Donalena Kitchen, let's talk about comfort food. Yes, again, all food is comfortable. But waffles. Puddings. We have a favorite story to share and a little look ahead to the spring garden. Yes, it is coming. It is coming. Donna, let's talk about waffles.
Oh, yeah. I just loaned Lana my waffle maker. She's a convert now. So I did get, I don't know, was it a year ago or so? We had Liz Colby from PFI on, and she was big on, we were asking, what are you eating during COVID, right? And Liz said that they'd been doing a lot of waffles, and she described this little waffle maker that she got that had a ceramic top on it.
Huh.
So I hauled off and got myself one of them, and I love it because, A, there's no Teflon, mm-hmm. but the ceramic is a non-stickish kind of surface, so it is easy to clean. So what did you think of it when you used it?
Well, I don't think I've made waffles in years because of that. Oh, my goodness. It's going to stick, and it's going to stick in that little tire tread design, and I will never get it off. It's perfect. The little waffle maker is perfect, and this recipe it's not just pancakes with holes in it. No, this was really
good. This is
really
a good recipe,
good.
And Liz had recommended it, and I looked up. It comes from the New York Times, and it's Melissa Clark is, I have to say, probably for the New York Times, my favorite recipe writer. They never fail. She's really good. She's also really sensible. She doesn't do ridiculously complicated, kind of stuff. So her recipe is very eggy. And they're rich, aren't they?
Oh, I noticed that. Like I said, this is not a pancake recipe. This is something else.
Yeah. So hers has a lot of butter, too. Six. I wonder, let's see, how many does this say this makes? Where does it say? Well, a lot. Anyway, and this new waffle maker is the sort of individual size. So they're smaller. So it's 6 tablespoons of butter, 2 cups of flour, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1 tablespoon of baking powder, teaspoon of sea salt, and a half teaspoon of baking soda. And then she puts in a cup of yogurt, a cup of milk, and 4 whole eggs. I mean, this is a substantial meal. That's a lot of good protein in there.
I was surprised. My goodness, that's a lot of stuff in there. It's starting up with all the butter and eggs. What is not to like?
Well, I took this recipe and I fuddled around with it, and I reduced the eggs and put in cheese. So and some herb. What did I put in? Probably some dried marjoram and maybe some pepper or something, because I wanted a savory waffle. Mm-hmm. That worked too. So this is a good basic. I've also used their, you know, you can buy your standard. I buy the whole grain waffle and pancake mixes, but you know, it's something that's fun that doesn't really take that long.
No, not at all. Oh, and here is a hint. And I did this, which really made these things, as they say, to die for. Okay. For a lighter, fluffier waffle, separate the eggs and put everything together, except save the egg whites. Beat the egg whites until stiff, and then fold into the batter. So
heavenly, huh?
Oh, poofy, poofy, and delicate, and lovely. And I haven't made waffles in years, and this recipe combined with your ceramic waffle iron, I am not afraid of waffle recipes anymore. This was really good.
It is a comforting food, and as Melissa Clark points out when she's doing the write-up about it, these are easy to make extra and freeze them and just pop them in the toaster for a quick breakfast, too.
Ah, very good.
If you're thinking ahead, as it were. But
leftovers are always good.
Yeah, right. Like, so is really nice.
Good. So you had savory waffles, base of anything. I kept mine sweet, and I had some local maple syrup on them. Also, I had the last of the syrup, the Juneberry syrup.
Oh, the Juneberry syrup.
Juneberry syrup. Or Saskatoon, that tree, the service berry.
So you didn't, and I bet you didn't have them just for breakfast, did you? Did you?
We had them for supper.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that much effort early in the morning is beyond me. That's why freezing them might be good, and just popping them in the toaster would be good. Would be fine. But anyway, we're on a little waffle binge right now. Yeah. You could also do pancakes if you don't want to get the waffle iron. But
speaking of waffle irons, I remember my mom having a waffle iron. I think everybody's mom had a waffle iron. What did one do before one had electric waffle irons?
I have another waffle iron that really is an iron. So it's a cast iron thing. It's a little, it's 2 pieces. So it's, one is kind of like a ring or the frame that you set around the burner. And then the other piece has a long handle on it, like a frying pan. And then it has a hinged lid. And so you put the waffle, obviously you heat it up with some kind of oil on it or bacon grease or something, you know, and you then halfway through, you actually lift it up and flip it over. So, you know, I think waffles are probably a rather old thing. That is the completely non-electronic version.
Yes, the idea of having this lovely cooked thing with divots to catch all of the juices you would care to put on it. Waffles, what a good idea. Okay, here's some more good things. You've been on a binge lately.
Oh, I'm on a pudding binge.
Pudding?
That's my idea of comfort food. I mean, when I was a kid, it was sort of the beginning of, you know, wasn't maybe the beginning of Jell-O, but instant pudding mixes were a big thing, or quick cook pudding mixes made by the Jell-O brand, right? So butterscotch was my favorite. Uh-huh. Even as a, you know, as an 8 or 9 year old, I would make my own butterscotch pudding because I really, really liked butterscotch, and I liked butterscotch ripple ice cream, which you don't see anymore either, right?
Uh-huh.
You can get butter brickle, but you can't get butterscotch swirl. So there was another Melissa Clark in the New York Times recipe for butterscotch pudding. So I've made it 3 times to get it exactly the way I want it. And I'm going to talk you through it because it's kind of fun. You separate out, you need 4 large egg yolks. And by the way, since not everybody reads the New York Times, we're going to print this one up and put it on our website so you can look it up. So you separate 4 eggs, and then with the yolks, you mix 3 tablespoons of cornstarch. And, you know, I just use a whisk and a little bowl because you want all the lumps out of the cornstarch, right? Then in another pan, this is kind of a fun thing. You put 3/4 cups of dark brown sugar. Now, I didn't have dark brown and I kept forgetting to buy it, so I just used light brown. But you put that with 1 tablespoon of butter and you melt the sugar. So it turns really hot, like you're making candy, and gets soft, and you stir it around. And then once it's completely melted, you pour in. She's got 2 cups of whole milk and 1 cup of heavy cream. I just put 3 cups of 2% milk simply because I figured if I make this, I'll probably eat the whole recipe myself, right? Which I did a few times, I'm embarrassed to say. But it was not no harm done because I reduced the fat a lot.
Good thinking.
And it was just as good. So what you do is as soon as you pour this milk onto the hot sugar, the sugar just like seizes up and it sputters and it's quite dramatic. And you go, oh, you look at that and you think, oh, this doesn't look right, but it is right. Then you just keep stirring gently the hot milk and the caramel, which has turned into like toffee kind of stuff, slowly dissolves into the milk. And that's where you're getting your butterscotch flavor. Now, here's something that I did at that point. I did it a little bit earlier. Into the sugar part, while I was melting the sugar, I added a bunch of ground coriander seed and a little bit of black pepper. That's my, you know, I think that the coriander always goes really well with the butterscotch. So I put, how much did I put? Probably 2 teaspoons, quite a bit. And then just a pinch of black pepper. So anyway, that melts into the milk, right? And then you put, let's see, how does this work? Oh, then you have to, what's that word? Oh, temper. Mm-hmm. You have to temper the egg mix. So into the bowl of the egg yolks and the cornstarch, you put, you start with, I had like 1/4 cup and then 1/4 cup, and you keep whisking because you're mixing. If you heat the egg yolks all at once, they glob up. But if you just mix a little bit until you've put maybe 1/3 of the hot liquid into the egg yolks, at which point you can then put it all back into the pan, and because that's where your cornstarch is. So then you have to continue heating, and it doesn't take long until it's at a low boil. As soon as it's come to just the slightest bit of a boil, it's really done. Then you add, this is the best part, 1 tablespoon of bourbon. And I use that Iowa Cedar Ridge bourbon.
Ah.
And also 2 teaspoons of vanilla. And there you have it. And then you just stir it all in together. And then you put it in your custard cups or whatever. And let it sit up in the freezer. Fridge.
Oh,
yeah. So we've been eating a lot of butterscotch pudding here.
Good.
Highly recommend it. So I will rewrite that so that it'll be on the website, because it's something you can whip up fairly quickly that is really delicious. Now, the other pudding, because I've been making more puddings, Oh, no, that's not it. It's, oh, yes. This one is a vegan recipe. I have a vegan household member, so every once in a while I try to do a little treat for Kartika. This one, I am pleased to say you don't at all notice that it's vegan. So this is basically a chocolate pudding recipe that is cornstarch based. So you mix together a third a cup of granulated sugar, a third a cup of unsweetened cocoa powder, and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch and the salt. Oh, yes, just 1/8 of a teaspoon. So you mix that all together, and then slowly you stir in the milk. Now, they are using oat milk. Now, you could make it with milk. It would be just fine. But I have been experimenting with the non-dairy milks, and I never was a fan of soy milk, I have to say, and that's been around for years. But and then along came almond milks, and then, I don't know,
rice
milk, cashew milk, rah, 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 rah. But of all of the ones that I have tried and tasted, I kind of like the oat milks. They're not too bad. They have a decent mouthfeel. They have an excellent environmental footprint. We could be growing more oats even in Iowa for cover crops. So I am a fan of oat milk. So then you stir the milk in, and it's 2 cups of, she says, non-dairy, preferably oat milk. And so then you stir that in until it starts to also come to that like slight boil, you know, which means the cornstarch mm-hmm. is cooked enough that it thickens, at which point you drop in 2 to 3 ounces of bittersweet chocolate. Like chocolate chips or something. And you just let that dissolve into the hot milk and 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract and then into the custard cups. There you go. Ah, so that one is really easy as well.
Good.
So pudding, I have been doing.
Pudding. Pudding. How nice. Oh, I like pudding too. I don't get around to doing it. That concept of testing or the eggs with the hot.
Oh, what did milk. I say the word is? I've forgotten already.
Whatever. Of course I've done this, if you put the eggs in to the hot thing right away, you're going to end up with scrambled eggs.
Right. There's lots of sauce recipes where you, tempering. You have to temper the mixture and let the eggs sort of heat up a little more slowly.
Puddings. What a good thing. What a good thing. More kitchen things here.
Oh, another comfort food.
Donna, what's brioche?
Okay. Nate Kimperman, the baker at Wheatsfield, has started adding brioche to the weekly, I think it's Saturday maybe. And I was so tickled because brioche is, now that is a treat. Okay, so brioche is, he's making them in a small loaf, but what it is it's a bread recipe that already has the butter in it. Mm. So butter and a little bit of eggs. It's kind of related to a challah bread recipe, but more butter, more butter. So when I got Nate's brioche, it's wonderful for, it makes the most divine sandwiches, wonderful French toast. It's so rich that you can toast it up and you don't even put butter on it if you don't want to. I mean, putting the butter on the brioche is like kind of like gilding the lily, as it were.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, right. Now on Saturdays, they have brioche at Wheatsfield.
What a good thing.
A lovely thing to have.
Now, quite a few years ago now, there was no bakery in the local food co-op. And then people started saying, well, I'd like a bakery, and I would like one too. And now we have got a lovely bakery, and you can tell that it's a success because when the bread comes out, you find people milling around, and they kind of rush the shelves, and it's quite a sport.
Oh, yeah, if you want a brioche, you got to get in there at the right time because it will be sold out. Now, Nate, who is the baker, used to cook out at the cafe, where they also do a lot of good baking, and their hamburger buns out there are a brioche recipe. And then Nate was telling me this wonderful story about the origin of brioche. It was I think in the 1700s or something, the Catholic Church in France decided to do some sort of, I don't know, like a gift to the people, right? So they started making this fancy bread with extra butter in it. And apparently when Marie Antoinette was saying, it became controversial because it was too indulgent, right?
Oh, no.
It was too indulgent, according to some people, right? So when apparently when Marie Antoinette said, let them eat cake, that is a mistranslation. She was actually saying, let them eat brioche, which I couldn't agree with her more.
Very good. Oh, a little decadence. I think that's
fine. It is. I mean, yeah, it's really, it's a treat to have a good local brioche. And thank you very much, Nate Kimperman, for doing that for us.
Yes. Like I said, having a bakery that actually makes bread. I mean, we can ship bread in from all over, but now more people are getting more fussy about eating their bread and getting bread out of a sack or out of a plastic bag that all these slices are square and pre-sliced. I don't know.
Nate is a real, he is a very talented baker. I mean, you know, he does a lot of sourdoughs. I mean, there are, you know, lots of places where, you know, there are, let's say there are other bakers around town, some of whom are franchisees and stuff like that. And yes, and this is true even for one of our large supermarket chains. They have installed new ovens, and you go in and you mm-hmm. look at the bread, and it looks beautiful. And yes, it's baked on the premises. However, what you don't realize is how this is accomplished. It's not that they have hired a baker. They are buying a pre-mixed product where basically you throw it in the mixer and, I don't know, maybe proof it. I don't even know how complicated they go. But the ingredients are pre-calculated, and I have to say the flavor is, to my taste, less than sublime. So I have really, really come to appreciate the quality of the bread that we can get that comes from Wheatsfield.
It's a treat. It's like I said, people do line up. And the co-op also puts out every week the artisan bread schedule for the week, because not all bread is baked all the time. There's a couple of breads that come out every day.
Right, like different. The brioche is only on Saturday.
And I've been picking up these little pieces of paper, paper. Actually, they're kind of like a bookmark, and I use them as such. But also, I got looking at that, and I thought, well, this sort of looks like poetry, because if you read this, let's have a little poem about bread, okay? Artisan bread schedule. Every day, sourdough, baguette, batard, ciabatta. Monday, Cuban bread, sourdough, wheat, honey seed. Tuesday, French round, apricot, sage. Ooh, good one. Wednesday, multigrain and olive. Thursday, chocolate, cherry, sunflower, oat, and pain au levain. Friday, challah. Polenta, parmesan, rosemary.
Oh, love that one.
Oh, the sourdough rye. Saturday, brioche, seven-grain levain, cranberry walnut, garlic herb focaccia. And Sunday, currant cardamom and deli rye.
I have to say, there's not a bad one among them. I always find something I like.
And if you happen to be ever so lucky, some of them are actually in the day-old bin, but even the day-old bin tends to be
not very often picked
over. So enjoy some really
good bread. I do want to iterate that the quality of the bread that you can buy at the cafe also is quite good.
Yeah, very, very good. That's nice. So, comfort food. We can use all of that we can get with some of us around spending more time at home. Let's get out those recipe books and give things a try.
Yeah, with the brioche, you could, first of all, the making, first of all, you can make wonderful French toast. Yes. Now that is another ultimate comfort food. And, you can make some pretty fancy sandwiches with it too. I mean, if you want something to be just a little more exalted, and the brioche, because it has so much fat in it, is good for days if it lasts that long.
I like bread that it's
you can buy a couple loaves, you know.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Yeah, if you can get there in time.
Good. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was some Danish button box music, an accordion with buttons instead of keys, kind of the old school of doing things. And that was an Iowa musical treasure. His name is Dwight Lamb. He's done a lot to preserve Scandinavian heritage with fiddle tunes and accordion tunes and things. It's from a CD called The White Lamb, Danish and American Melodies. And that tune was called Crested Hen.
And did you say Nate Kimperman, our baker, was playing the fiddle on it?
There is a connection here. There,
yeah.
Yes. The Nate Kimperman, the baker, was playing the fiddle. He, when you find an old master, it's nice to apprentice with them. And Nate studied music with Dwight Lamb for a while. So we'll have a little bit more of their music later. But that was the Crested Hen, and I picked that because it sort of leads into our next topic here. Well, Don and I have been on the air for, we're going on 7 years now, and we found out that we share a lot of things in common. We grew up in different parts of the country, but we both have a copy of the Better Homes and Gardens storybook. And so we end up having nursery rhymes and poems in common because it's nice to have that sort of thing.
That was a two-volume edition. Mm-hmm. Do you have the other one?
No, too? I just have this
one. The other one, we had them. The only one I have left is the same one. This one is a yellow one, mm-hmm. And the other one was kind of rusty red. Mm-hmm.
Good. This is a copyright 1950, and my copy is well-worn, and so is Donna's. We're going to share a story, and like I said, it kind of comes off that Crested Hen music here. The story of the little red hen. We've heard it. It is a traditional nursery story, a traditional folk tale. It's told many different ways, but kind of has the same theme throughout. It's a story of the tale of a kitchen. It's a story about doing your fair share. It's also got danger, a narrow escape, and the importance.
And this version, which I remember very, very clearly because it's, what's this called? It's called a
pictograms.
Right.
I think. Yeah.
So there's a lot of words, and then there's a picture of one of the words. So you know, my mother would read the things, and when she would come to the picture, she would let either me or my sister pipe in and say that word. So it's kind of a training for reading. It's very cute.
Actually, bear with us, because when I was reading this, I'd come to a picture and go, what? 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 We're so used to reading words. This is a very colorful edition here. And we'd like to share with you the story of the little red hen. Once upon a time, there was a little red hen who lived in a little house on the edge of a big forest.
She could cook, and she could sew, and she swept and dusted the little house every day.
She had a garden where she planted corn and potatoes and peas and sunflowers.
With the little red hen lived a cat and a rat and a mouse. That's quite a combination, you realize.
No, I didn't.
The little red hen cooked their meals and took good care of them, but they were very lazy and never did anything to help her.
Ah, the plot thickens. One morning, the sun came up bright and early and woke the little red hen. She popped out of bed and prepared the breakfast. A bowl of cream for the cat, a pan of corn for the rat, and a saucer of wheat for the mouse, and a little blue dish of breadcrumbs for herself. And then she woke the cat and the rat and the mouse. The cat washed himself, and the rat and the mouse brushed their whiskers, and they all sat down to breakfast and ate up every bit. When she had washed and dried the dishes and the little blue dish for herself and put them away and swept the kitchen with a little broom, the little red hen said, "Today, I think I will bake a beautiful cake."
The cat said, "Goody." The rat said, "Goody, goody." And the mouse said, "Goody, goody, goody."
Then the little red hen asked, "Who will go to the woodpile and fetch some wood to heat the oven to bake my beautiful cake?"
The cat said, "I won't." The rat said, "I won't." And the mouse said, "I won't." So the little red hen said, "Then I'll have to go and do it myself." And she did.
Then the little red hen said, "Who will go to the meadow and milk the cow and bring fresh milk to put in my beautiful cake?"
The cat said, "I won't." The rat said, "I won't." The mouse said, "I won't." So the little red hen said, "Well, then I'll have to go and do it myself." So she did.
Then the little red hen said, "Who will go to the nest and find eggs to beat into my beautiful cake?"
The cat said, "I won't." The rat said, "I won't." And the mouse said, "I won't." And the little red hen said, "Then I will go and do it myself." So she did.
Then the little red hen said, "Who will go to the shop and buy butter and sugar and flour to put in my beautiful cake?"
The cat said, this is the version I grew up with. The cat said, "Not I."
Uh-huh.
The rat said, "Not I." Uh-huh. And the mouse said, "Not I." And the little red hen said, "And then I must go and do it myself." So she did.
Then the little red hen took a bowl and a big spoon and mixed butter, sugar, and eggs, and milk, and flour, and she beat the dough and put it in three pans and put it in the oven.
The cat sat by the oven door and waited. The rat sat by the oven door and sniffed. The mouse sat by the oven door and looked as if he were getting ready to nibble.
When the cake was baked to a turn, the little red hen took it out of the oven, and it smelled so delicious that the cat and the rat and the mouse frisked about the floor. It smelled so delicious that the old fox, far away in his den in the forest, and all the little kit foxes sniffed the air and said, "What is that beautiful smell?" The old fox said, "It smells to me as if the little red hen is baking today." And pretty soon he took down the sack that hung by the door of the den and said to his wife, "I think I'll go and see the little red hen. Perhaps I can bring a nice fresh cake home for the kits, and perhaps I will bring the little red hen home too. She will make us a fine dinner. So put the pot on to boil and wait." The old fox came out of the forest and loped along very softly toward the little red hen's house.
In the meantime, the little red hen set the layers of cake onto the table to cool, and then she took a bowl and made a frosting. First, she spread the frosting on the first layer all over very carefully. Then she put the second layer on top of that and frosted all over very carefully. And then she put the third layer on top of that and frosted all over very carefully. And it looked perfectly delicious. Then the little red hen said, "Now, who will help me eat the cake?" The cat said, "I will." The rat said, "I will." And the mouse said, "I will." But the little red hen said, "No, you won't. I'm going to eat it all by myself."
Just then the old fox put his head in the window. When the little red hen saw him, she was so frightened that she flew up to the top of the cupboard and hid behind the clock. The cat hid under the bed. The rat went into his big hole behind the stove, and the mouse went into her little hole behind the door. The fox came into the kitchen and looked around. "Nobody home," he asked. "But my, what a fine cake. I might as well eat it up."
And as he was about to gobble the cake, when the little red hen flew down at him in a rage and tried to drive him away by flapping her wings and pecking at him.
Then the old fox laughed, "Ha ha," and grabbed the little red hen and popped her in his sack and tied her up and went out of the house so fast he forgot the cake. Ha ha. He loped along toward the den, but the sun was hot and the fox had come a long way. And when he saw a shady tree by the roadside, he laid down to rest for a bit. And before he knew, he had fallen asleep. As soon as the little red hen heard him snore, she took her little pair of scissors out of her apron pocket and snipped a hole in the sack just big enough to creep out of. When she was out, she quickly found a rock that would weigh about as much as she did and put it in the hole she had cut. Then she took her needle and thread and her little thimble and sewed up the hole. Then she ran home as fast as she could. When the old fox woke up from his nap, he grabbed the sack and started off for home. He was in such a hurry to put the little red hen in the pot to boil, he didn't notice that it was a stone bouncing in the sack on his back instead of the little red hen. When he got to his den, the kids ran out and said, "Oh, Father, have you brought us the cake?" And the fox remembered that he'd forgotten to bring the cake. He said, "No, my dears, but I have something much better, a plump little red hen." And he opened the sack, and his wife took the lid off the boiling pot, and in he dropped the rock with a great splash. So the old fox knew that the wise little red hen had outwitted him again. He was very cross, and the fox's family had no dinner all that day.
But the little red hen ran home across the fields until she came to the little house, and there was the cake, safe and sound, on the table, looking more delicious than ever. And the cat heard her and came out from under the bed, and the rat came out from his hole behind the stove, and the mouse came out from behind the door, and they were so glad to see their dear little red hen safe home again that they promised they would never be selfish and lazy anymore.
So the little red hen forgave them, and they were very happy and ate the cake all up, every crumb of it. There we go.
Yes.
That's the story of the little red hen. You see, it's got all the high drama of any of your fancy stories you have today. I remember hearing this in my father's voice reading it. So it's good memories, and the little red hen, I always kind of wondered about the fox. I felt sorry for the fox's family, too. There's a lot of things to think about in there. Yes, there is. There is.
"Not I," said the mouse.
"Not I either." No. You said you had another book that you liked.
Oh, it, along the same lines, it's somewhere about in the same place as the memory banks, is the fable, and I think it's an Aesop's fable, maybe, The Country Mouse and the City Mouse, which I think Disney did something, because I can remember some brilliant, I think an animated version or something, you know, where the poor old country mouse goes with his cousin, the city mouse, and there's a big banquet. Maybe it's Tom and Jerry. I can't, because of course there's a cat, right? So they get to the, you know, the fancy dinner, and the country mouse is just flabbergasted at all the good things to eat sitting there on the banquet table, and they start to help themselves. And all of a sudden, the cat comes. And then he realizes, of course, the city mouse, it may look good, but it's extremely dangerous. And he goes running back home to the safety of his humble, modest, but very comfortable country home.
Right. There are consequences. We learn a lot from our nursery rhymes, from our folk tales.
Different value systems.
Yeah. So, thinking about chickens here, I ran across a little news item here that I will share with you. Coming up this coming weekend, I believe the Super Bowl is happening. Yeah, it is. And people generally snack themselves silly during the Super Bowl. Here is a little fact I ran across from the National Chicken Council. Over the Super Bowl weekend, Americans are expected to devour 1.42 billion chicken wings, enough to circle the circumference of the earth 3 times. I don't believe that.
Okay, I'm just visualizing three circles of, you know, touching chicken wings all around the globe. Oh, my.
It boggles the mind. Yes, it
maybe
does.
Maybe they just save the wings all year long for this occasion.
Probably. Yeah. So you got your wings and you got your McNuggets. That takes care of the whole chicken then, right?
Now, the wings are not the drumettes, right? They're just the outer two appendages? Or is it the drumette and the whole?
I don't know. If you're going to go around the world 3 times, you might want to add those other things too.
All right, I have to confess my ignorance on this because I am not a big chicken wing eater. I eat the whole chicken.
Yeah, we talk about eating the whole animal. And anyway, for those that are borrowing or in devouring chicken wings, there you go.
Have at it.
Very good. This is KHON. You're listening to the Don Alana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Don Alana Kitchen at khoifm.org. There's archives and recipes from our show. There's a picture of us. Yes, and find out more about this radio station. There's a lot of good programs on this radio station, all put together by people who are passionate about what they are talking about. And also, as Donna mentioned, she will have that butterscotch pudding recipe up there soon.
In time to make it for Valentine's Day, should you like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's coming up too. So next week, Don Alana Kitchen Show, look forward to some good things.
More
to make
sweets.
More
sweets for your sweeties.
To make your Valentine's happy. Well, there's a lot of interesting things in the work. So we'll be there. We'll be there for you. Yes. Oh, what have we here? Good. Oh, and also, if you'd like to contact us, you can contact me, Lana, at my email. If you want to send a recipe or tell us what's on your plate, you can send questions or comments about the Don Alana Kitchen to onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. That's my email, and I tend to look at that occasionally. So we'd love to hear from you, because here we are talking into a microphone, and it's nice to know that other folks are listening out there. Did you like the Little Red Hen story? I've been meaning to read that on the air for quite a while. Very good. Well, thinking ahead to spring, it is coming. I've been noticing on some chat rooms and some emails I've been getting that there are some seed shortages, seeds for garden seeds. And last year, people mentioned that, especially people that grow vegetables for a living, this is a big deal. I mean, if you can't get a certain variety of zinnia and you want to put in another zinnia, fine. But say that you want to put in, I don't know, quite a whole lot of green beans because you want to take those to market. And you count on a certain kind of green bean seed to get you into the market season. And matter of fact, I've been noticing some seed shortages too. Used to be that seed catalogs came after Christmas and you kind of get a cup of cocoa there and sit down and take your time and order things. seed catalogs started coming a little long after Thanksgiving this year. And so I kind of got on the ball and I started ordering things at least by the first week in January. And I'm getting responses from those orders now, which is a good thing. But surprisingly, in almost every order, I see sold out, no longer available, or back ordered. So that's happening. And I'm hearing that from some other gardeners too. Now, either there are more people using seeds or people didn't grow enough seeds to start with. So I'm hoping that this means that people want to garden.
It must go along with the canning jar shortage that we experienced last fall.
Oh, the last I checked with the people at the grocery store that have usually stocked canning jar lids all year. We're not going to get any canning jar lids until March or April. You got to be careful. April or March, got to be careful there.
I guess this is a good sign. It means that people are making their own food a little bit more. One good result of this pandemic. Okay.
That's good. And because canning jar lids are not the kind of thing you buy on a whim. Like seeds you might buy on a whim and not use them. But canning jar lids, people are pretty serious. And actually, I should say seeds are pretty serious too. So if you haven't ordered seeds yet, get on your horse and do it. And don't be afraid if something is out in a certain variety. Luckily, there are lots of different varieties.
You can try new varieties.
New varieties. But yeah, it's a time to start planning for spring. And here is something I want to mention. The folks at Mustard Seed Farm, a great farm, north and west of Ames for a bit, Alice McGarry and company.
It's the Catholic Workers Farm.
Catholic Worker Farm. They are starting a new series. They often have had in the past events where you'd come and bring a picnic lunch or join them for a lunch, and you'd have kind of a lunch and learn kind of event where they'd talk about crafts and how to garden and how to prune fruit trees and things. This year, guess what? Things are going to be happening on Zoom. Actually, I found that Zoom kind of helps sometimes because it kind of narrows your mind down and kind of makes you plan and make lists and things. Anyway, they have planned a bunch of wonderful events put on by the Mustard Seed Community Farm. Their first event is going to be February 3rd from noon to 1. It is a Zoom event. It's going to be about getting started gardening with Mustard Seed founders Alice McGarry and Nicholas Leet, and a guest appearance by Lois Fulton. It's going to be an Ask a Farmer event geared toward people helping getting started gardening and help the already gardeners grow great food. There'll be plenty of time to ask questions, and that's good. That's good. And also, there will be more events in the works here, and these all look good. There's going to be a cooking class, a roundtable discussion about animal intelligence, a wellness day, wellness skill share session, say that, and a creative time, a creative projects hangout, and talk about projects that you're working on. And I don't know how Alice gets it all done, but thanks to her for doing that. You can find out more information if you go to Mustard Seed Community Farm. You can Google that or Alice McGarry at yahoo.com to find out. It's a Mustard Seed Community Farm. Find out how to get on their Zoom sessions. The Mustard Seed folks like Donna said, are a Catholic worker farm, which means they have a community outreach and a community outreach that is meant to help people. They've done great work growing extra vegetables, extra food for
local organizations. Right, they contribute they contribute fresh local produce to Food at First, mm-hmm. and a couple of other issue places around town, too. I think there's a clinic that gives away healthy food and things like that. Alice is very involved in making sure that our community is fed, every single one of us.
Thank you. Thank you. And also, I found out that just recently, a Catholic worker house in town in Ames has been opened up. I think it's called the Romero House, and they will be working with the farm, and they'll be having a lot of community outreach things too. So Mustard Seed Community Farm has a slogan, good food for everyone. So come and join those little virtual events as a community and learn a little something this weather, this winter. And you can share your wisdom, your ideas, and your questions, and think about spring, because I don't know about you, but I sure am looking forward to it.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to finally get a real cold spell. So not going out of the house and doing everything on Zoom is a pretty good option.
Yeah, very good. Well,
I think we covered everything today.
No, we're good.
Okay.
I went from this same article that had the fact about chicken wings being connected around, somehow chicken wings holding hands around the circumference of the Earth. I'll never get that out of my mind here. It's from an article that I got off the internet, where I get everything, written by a person named Sarah Anderson from the Global Economy Project of the Institute for Policy Studies. And she has a few comments here about, well, guess what, folks? We are moving into a new administration, and that's going to make some difference, we hope, for the better, for communities, for agriculture, because the influence of big lobbyists, including the chicken lobby, is probably going to change here because new rules are coming along.
There is a change already.
Yeah,
I read that already. So there was in the works an effort to, it's called speeding up the line, which means that the animals are slaughtered. And so the line is kind of like a conveyor belt that you hang the chicken or the cow or the whatever on. And as it goes in front of the different workers, each worker does a certain slice that does, you know, maybe takes the wings off or something like this. So line speed, if the line is going very fast, there are more injuries. And also line speed turns out was a contributing factor to higher COVID rates in processing plants. So, and the Trump administration, at the behest of the
chicken people
and other animal lobbyists, was going to actually allow faster line speeds. Well, the new administration has reversed that. So the line speeds will be slowed down, and the OSHA laws will be more carefully enforced. And hopefully that will have a great benefit to all of the people that are bringing us all of these chicken wings, for example.
Just think of the people that are working in meat processing plants,
which have had a disproportionately high number of COVID infections.
If you are worried that you might not have enough chicken wings, the previous administration was trying to increase the line speed to for chicken processing was 175 birds per minute. I mean, can you? I don't know about you, but if I'm holding a sharp knife, okay, I don't want to be working that
let's
fast.
Let's just say it's definitely stressful. Okay.
Right.
So to slow it down a little bit.
They're going to slow it down to all the way down to 140 birds a minute. Now, that's a start. They can slow down a little bit. I don't need chicken wings that reach around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just think about this. If you have to grow your own chicken wings, there are only two wings per chicken, okay? That's a lot of chickens.
That is. So much needs to be done to ensure safe and dignified living for essential workers in the meat and poultry processing industries. So a little bit is changing for the better in the new administration. Let's keep them at it. It's worth celebrating anyway. So let's think about the future. Think about chickens and, think about the Super Bowl. Yes, sirree. Oh, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We talked about comfort food today, waffles, pudding, and the little red hen. You heard the music Crested Hen, and we'll go out with a waltz by Dwight Lamb. Some Danish button box music. This is KHOIFM.org. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. We'll be right back.